The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome in. It's Tom Curran's Patriots Talk Podcast. I'm Tom Curran, so I'm in the right place. You're in exactly the right place as well on the other end of this. Today on the pod, we will talk to Matt Cassel, of course, about who are the greatest passers in NFL history in the wake of Drew Brees setting the touchdown record in the regular season. We'll also talk about the Buffalo Bills. Matt is great on the challenge that their defense poses, having played against them last year. And also, let's start it off here at the top with Spygate 2.0, The Dirty Lens. All that, and only all that, on the Patriots Talk Podcast.
Adam Vinatieri, move to the 40, Patriots time, world champion, and there ain't nothing you can do about it.
Hey, I hope everybody's doing real good. I mean, it is a freaking skating rink out there on the 128, 95, 93, 24 area, 495, okay? So I want you to be real careful if you've got this downloaded on the Tuesday. This could even extend into Wednesday. NBC 10 will get you all your information on the weather. That's a sister station. But, you know, we're still kind of waiting here before we get to the football on whatever is going to happen with an NFL ruling on the Patriots having taped the Cincinnati Bengals sideline. I don't like the names of things. I don't like the tuck rule game. I don't like the tuck game. I don't like the Flakegate. I don't like Spygate. And I don't like Spygate 2.0 because it legitimizes things to a degree. Tuck rule especially. That was a snowball, folks. Okay? And this isn't Spygate 2.0 while the first Spygate was legitimate because they were spying. This one, how anyone can sit there with a straight face and conclude that what they saw on Sunday, provided by Jay Glazer, gives any kind of information or intel at all to the Patriots that they couldn't have otherwise easily procured is asinine. And the notion, let's not forget the notion that that very pedestrian tape, which didn't show down and distance, which just showed players milling around the sidelines, those players who, of course, if they were trying to track substitution patterns, hey, watch the All-22 and see the guys jogging on and off. Who comes in, who comes out. It's not hard to figure it out. Or wait for the damn snap. Figure out who's on the field and who isn't. There is no intel at all that could be derived from that. So reports of outrage among NFL officials and executives. Again, that underscores for me why there's so much goddamn turnover in NFL front offices and with coaching staffs. These guys are not the highest IQ individuals. They go to work in sweatpants. Okay? We're not talking about deep thinkers. There's nothing there. But the longer it goes, the harder it gets to avoid the conclusion that the outcry generated over the weekend that I thought was going to die down with the games was reinvigorated by this tape. And I think that it's almost like looking at clouds. Hey, I see a unicorn. Do you see a unicorn? Even if you don't see the unicorn, you say you do too, so you don't seem like a zero imagination dummy. So now that the tape came out, everyone is somehow jumping on the bandwagon and saying, oh, yeah, I could see how that could be a problem. I could see how you can glean some information. Dan Orlovsky, who has otherwise been a real steady analyst, I thought, for ESPN, started talking about how the headsets used to go out at Gillette Stadium. Every time he was – look, we're not talking about 25-year veteran Dan Orlovsky. And, Dan, make sure you know, too, when the headsets go out for one side, they're turned off for the other, and they go out all over the NFL. That's a side issue that I'm not going to get too involved in. But what we have now is people who were otherwise reluctant to dig their torches and their pitchforks out of their garage and mount a charge have actually found them, and they got the face paint on, and here they come over the hill to make sure that the Patriots are held responsible for a lack of institutional control. I've heard people mention that as the head of football, everything resides with Bill Belichick. Anything that goes on within the organization resides with Bill Belichick. I'm sorry, is he in charge of the goddamn parking on game day? Because it's the same thing, in essence. Might be an overstatement. But it's the same thing. One is marketing, and the Patriots never should have agreed, nor should they have aimed a camera at the Bengals sideline. Whatever ignorance is bliss that they hoped would exist with the Bengals vanished. And I don't blame the Bengals for being pissed off. But I wonder how many times Roger Goodell has had someone get in his ear and say to him, look, this is the same old thing with the same old team, and they're making us look bad. You got to do something about this. This is hijacking 2 weeks at the end of our 100th season. Or do they instead say, you know what? I wouldn't play around with the Patriots too much here. I mean, the next thing you know, we'll have the Dirty Lens and Contacts website will be up. You know, there'll be Robert Kraft standing at a podium talking about turning his cannons on the NFL. I mean, and you really don't want to play too hard with Bill Belichick sometimes because it's been intimated around that Bill knows where not just some of the bones are buried, but whole mass graves around the NFL as to teams doing things outside the purview of the league bylaws and jurisdictions, whatever the hell I'm trying to say there. So it's going to be fascinating to see what the NFL comes down with, but the longer it goes, the more inescapable it becomes to me that Roger Goodell is being painted into a corner where he has to do something that will appease. To me, split the baby in Solomonic genius. Find him $1 million. Find him 1.5. Take it out on ownership. They got that in their couch cushions. But if you're smart, you'll leave football alone because this was not a football operation. This was easily attainable video of a sideline, the backs and posteriors of players and coaches with nothing to glean from it. Let's use a little critical thinking here. At the dawn of 2020, I know that it is a vanishing quality, but let's use a little critical thinking. All right? Now, I'm going to speak critically just for a moment before I bring my guy Matt Castle in here. About the Mardi Gras parade the New Orleans Saints tried to pull off in the middle of that game just because Drew Brees set the record for touchdown passes. I love Drew Brees. I love the Saints. I love Sean Payton. It's probably my second favorite team to observe if I throw all objectivity out the window. I just like them. I like the city, like the fans, like the unis, like everything about them. But it's cute and adorable, if it weren't so sad, to celebrate the touchdown pass that Drew Brees set. Like Tom Brady's not on his bumper. Tom Brady's not breaking the record. He's never going to get it away from Brees. I know that. Just the way the offense looks. But what if Brady goes out and throws four on Saturday? Patriots going to stop the game, set off the confetti cannons, hand out sheet cake all around the stadium? No. And what if Brees comes back on Sunday and resets it? Same thing. He's up in the stands taking selfies. We can't have this. Okay? Some measure of circumspection is necessary when we see records set, especially records that are merely the byproducts of a style of offense being played that was not played back in the day. We're going to get into this with Matt Castle. Who are the greatest passers of all time? The greatest throwers of the football? I'm not talking about arm strength. Otherwise, we'd be talking here about David Klingler and Dan McGuire. And who's the other dude who's got the wicked arm? Oh, Kyle Bowler. Throwing from his knees 75 yards. We're going to talk about the greatest throwers and the greatest passers, not the greatest arm strength. So we're going to bring Matt in here. But before we bring Matt in, I want to let you know.
Hello.
Good afternoon, Matthew.
Good afternoon, my friend. How are you?
I'll tell you, it's a hell of a day up here. Well, traffic-wise, I mean, it's a skating rink on this particular Tuesday out there on 12895.
Well, there you go. go. It's a beautiful day here, too, but we're probably not as cold as you are. We're about, you know, mid-30s. For us, it's a little cold down here in Nashville, Tennessee.
Yeah, how are things down in Nashtown? You got all your lights up and whatnot?
Oh, yeah, we're ready to rock and roll. Now it's just, you know, last minute checking off the shopping list and, you know, getting ready for Santa. As you well know, with five kids, it becomes a little bit more complicated at times.
Yeah, it does. Now,
especially as
you...
the kids get older, you know, Santa doesn't always know what to bring the older kids. The younger kids, you can buy them anything. They're going to forget.
Many, many, many things. You can separately package Nerf bullets for what are those?
Exactly.
Yeah, and say, oh, yeah, you got 75 things, and it's just a fusillade of bullets that you wrapped up. But the other
there
kids, now, is your wife a stickler, and are you a stickler for making sure the kids have the exact same number of wrapped gifts?
No, we kind of do like the one from Santa, one from parents, but really then kind of have a hodgepodge of little stuff. But, I mean, like we got a lot of cousins. I've got three siblings. She's got three siblings, grandparents. You know how that goes.
These kids are going to be swimming in it.
They're going to be swimming in it.
Listen, I'm watching the football game last night with Drew Brees of the New Orleans Saints, and he sets the record for career touchdown passes, and I think that's terrific. I really do.
That was unbelievable, wasn't it?
Well, yeah. But on the other hand, too, Tom Brady has 611 passes in the NFL that he has had leave his right hand and land in the hands of a receiver, because I'm including postseason games.
Ooh, there you go.
And I think we lose sight of the fact that, you know, we spend a lot of time focused on the accomplishment in the regular season, whether it's 5,084, which was Marino's mark, which stood from 84 to 2011, or, I mean, touchdown pass mark is, they're bastardized versions of real stats because the game changes so much.
No doubt, and you're playing better competition, too, when you get to that next level in the playoffs and everything else. So I have to agree with you in terms of those stats should absolutely count in terms of a seasonal stat, because that's the truth of the matter, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because you have to accomplish great things in a season and win ball games in order to get to that point in the playoffs. And then when you're able to excel and achieve great things in playoffs, I mean, why should that be a separate category?
Right.
It's still part of that season.
The other factor, too, is indoors, outdoors. You know, you got Manning was indoors for a huge swath of his career. Brees, obviously, has been either outdoors playing NFC South teams, as Manning was with AFC South teams, or in San Diego. Brady has only played, I believe it was 23 games, I did it earlier today, or maybe it was 30 games. He has 49 touchdowns and 19 picks. I have it on my quick stats thing. And in those 23 games, yeah, it was 23 games, 43 touchdowns, 19 picks in domes and retractable roof games. So it's pretty astounding. And that actually is leading me to, we can talk in a huge circle about this, but who do you, as a former NFL quarterback, a guy who can compare notes with any of these guys when it comes to arm strength, accuracy as a thrower, because I think you are an excellent thrower of the ball, especially on the run.
I appreciate that wholeheartedly.
I know you do. Who is the greatest thrower? Who's the greatest passer of all time? Passer, and in my definition, what would your definition be in that regard first?
Just in terms of passing?
Yeah, who's the greatest passer?
Accuracy, arm strength, all those things that go along with it. Gosh, I mean, you've got some great ones over the years. Obviously, Brady, Rodgers, Favre come to mind, and then you go old school a little bit with the Marinos of the world, Elway, Jim Kelly, Warren Moon.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and as you go, yeah, I mean, Troy Aikman was absolutely, he had some of the best footwork and mechanics that you'll ever see from any quarterback.
Yeah, the accuracy of him. People really underrate how good a passer Troy Aikman was.
There's no doubt. And, you know, the thing is about that system, too, I played in North Turner's system with North, and it's a lot of seven-step drops. It's a lot of deep outcuts. It's a lot of comebacks at 18 yards, skinny posts, which is one of the hardest throws that you can make. And he was deadly accurate on all that stuff and the rhythm in which he threw. And, you know, to a certain extent, Phillip Rivers as well, and how he excelled in that system. It's a rhythm to it, and you have to get the ball out on time, especially when you're throwing the ball deep down the field. And there, those, I mean, especially Troy Aikman, like I said, when he was in his prime and throwing to those guys, I mean, he's as accurate and had some of the best arm strength you'll ever see, and threw one of the most beautiful balls.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I grew up as a Dallas Cowboy fan because my dad was from Texas, so I grew up watching those guys with the Jay Novacek and the Michael Irvins and Moose and all those guys, and it was Emmitt Smith, and it was fun to watch because, I mean, you talk about play at a really high level. Troy Aikman was always fun to watch. And Jim Kelly had, like, you know, the perfect mechanics over the top. Warren Moon was, I always thought, was an incredible.
Big time over the top.
Big time over the top. But, I mean, and more currently, I mean, Favre was a guy that could make any throw anywhere at any time. And that was the fun part about watching him play the game, was always the childlike enthusiasm that he brought to the game and how he approached it. But at the same time, some of the plays that he would make, just running around, and his toughness that goes along with it was incredible. But in today's day and game, still, to me, Rodgers has probably got one of the most accurate, strongest arms around. I mean, it's just incredible how the ball comes off his finger and how deadly accurate he is down the field.
Especially on the run, throwing like a shortstop at times.
No doubt. Going to his left. And some of the hardest throws for a right-handed quarterback is when you're flush to your left and you've got to flip your hips back to throw an over route or a corner or something like that, and he does it effortlessly. You know, and some of these young guys today, too, are, I mean, with the Mahomes and Deshaun and those guys, they're unbelievable throwing the ball, and especially they're more diverse and bring a whole new element to the game, too, because, like you just said, throwing on the run, which a lot of people, you know, and the game has evolved so much, but those older quarterbacks were, as you always hear the term, pure pocket passer. It was a drop back, seven step, five step in the gun, but you're mainly in the pocket, where these guys have a whole new element to the game that they're transforming that position to what it is today.
And I'm looking at a guy that we actually sometimes tend to overlook, and I know I'm going to mention him, and you're going to say you're exactly right because we share a brain. Russell Wilson is one of the best on-the-run throwers.
Absolutely, 100%. I'm sorry that I didn't mention that.
No, I know. It's bizarre because I was thinking the same thing. He is as accomplished a thrower, I think, and passer in terms of accuracy, down-the-field accuracy, short-range touch and arm strength as a former baseball player. We are missing out just a smidge on what is trending towards being the middle age of a definite Hall of Fame career, yes?
Absolutely. I mean, there, you think about pure passer ratings over a significant period of time. I mean, it's Rodgers and Russell Wilson 1 and 2. I mean, they're over 100 in their career in terms of passer rating, which is incredible to think about, and especially because the way that Russell plays, and he's able to manipulate that defensive line and buy himself time, and he runs outside the back of the pocket, but he always remains a passer. And that's what I think. You know, a lot of guys, and we talked a little bit about this on Sunday after the game, like just how you buy time sometimes with people, especially quarterbacks in the pocket, when you start to, everything starts to break down in terms of route patterns and they're covered, especially in the red zone, that you have to fight your urgency to get outside that pocket and just run, you know, for survival mode. But at the same time, these guys, he's got such a uncanny ability to buy time and then still be able to hit that guy down the field, and those guys work for him, and it's incredible to watch. It's really actually a lot of fun.
So get this. Here was my list that I threw up there with my poll today for Quick Slants. I have Marino as the greatest passer of all time. His record stood from 1984 to 2011. He threw 48 touchdown passes when everybody else was throwing 22. He was like Babe Ruth.
Right.
And so I have him up there. Then I have Brady and Manning as throwers and passers, as passers, you know, accuracy, decision-making, touch, the ability to figure out things. I have them at, you know, 2A and 2B. Then I have Rodgers and Breeze, and that's my top five. Then we're going to go with the Elways and the Favres and the Aikmans.
And the Aikman. And then, you know, as you go further down the list, I mean, you got to think about Kurt Warner was pretty good, too, now.
Yeah.
I mean, Kurt Warner, his accuracy and what he did for all those years. Like I said, I always go back. I always loved watching Warren Moon and Jim Kelly and those guys play. And then a guy that, you know, wasn't always recognized for being just a pure thrower, but an unbelievable athlete that kind of transformed the position in his own right was Steve Young, you know.
Yeah.
But he was, if you look at, you know, the Montana versus Steve Young comparison. I mean, people could go either way on who the better quarterback was for that organization, based on statistics, championships, everything else.
I tell you a funny story. Belichick, when he was a much more giving and guy with the local media, he sat us all down once and showed us film of the Giants in the media toward the end of the year, and brought us into a room, and he showed us film of Montana, and then he showed us film of Steve Young, and he said, you know, with Montana, we'd have to worry about X, Y, and Z, and that he would do this because he'd notice we do this. With Young, we didn't have to worry about it. It was just interesting.
Very interesting. Very interesting. He just added a new element to the game, right, with his ability to run the ball and make plays the way that he did with his legs.
Which, I mean, Montana had arm strength, too. That's the thing people – and he was a little dude.
He wasn't a big dude, but he could sling it.
Well, see, now that was good. We spent some time. We went down a different road, talked about some things. Now let's roll it back to 2019. And look at what we discovered the other day from the Patriots' win over the Bengals. I wrote a column after the game saying that that game can be whatever you want it to be. If you want it to be a signal that things are starting to awaken and the Patriots have more than a glimmer of hope, you can do that entirely. If you want to say shit, same old, you can do that too. Where did you come down on it?
You know what? I mean, there's a lot of positives that you took away from the game. Obviously, this offensive unit, we keep hearing the phrase, it is what it is. But at the same time, there are building blocks. I mean, the run game, and I understand it's against the Cincinnati Bengals. They didn't play somebody that you could actually look at and say, well, this is a reasonable opponent, and they went out against a really good defense. But at the same time, building confidence in the run game down the stretch is huge for this team, and figuring out what, you know, what runs are working, and getting Sony Michel his confidence going. Rex Burkhead had a really, really good day. Those are all positive takeaways from the game for me. You know, Josh McDaniels earlier in that week said, hey, we're going to get N'Keal Harry involved, and they did. You know what? They, even if it's just with speed sweeps and a catch here or there, but even the catch down the field said something to me about, you know, gaining a little confidence in a guy and him showing the ability to go get a ball down the field and having that big play potential, which they've definitely been lacking in terms of guys other than maybe Julian out there and the consistency factor. You know, there is some concerns going down the stretch. Obviously, hopefully Julian is continues to stay healthy.
Yeah, you concerned about that, the way he looked the other day?
Definitely. I mean, obviously, when you get to this time of the year, everybody's banged up, everybody's fighting through something, but obviously he's fighting through a little bit more than just your typical bumps and bruises. And you could tell that with just how he looked, how he was playing. The other issue for me is, you know, where's Sanu's at? Because this is a guy that we continue to say, you know, we need him to step up and be the guy that we anticipated him to be. And I don't think it's any fault of his own, but I do think that he's still probably coming back from injury, still learning the offensive playbook and doing those things. So you can make that case as well. But
I was going to say, let's focus on him. Keep going on that, but I want to focus on him a little bit because I've kept saying that he's the linchpin of the offense going down the stretch.
Yep.
So are you seeing at all a guy who might just not be in rhythm with Tom yet? I find myself sometimes excuse making for Brady. First throw of the game, you know, he's amped up, he threw it over his head. The play to the end zone, the safety was trailing. It was going to be a tough fit because the safety was in between Sanu and Brady, and he had to maybe put it was a tougher throw than it looked. I wonder if I'm making too many excuses for Brady, though, in general and with Sanu.
Right. I mean, like you said, I think that the first game, anytime you start a game, and I'll tell you, the adrenaline, no matter how many years you played in the league, the adrenaline's going those first few series until you kind of settle everything down in your mind. You start to get into the rhythm of the game. So you're going to miss throws sometimes early on. That was a missed throw. Later in the game, I mean, on another crossing route, another overthrow, and I don't know if that is, again, he's expecting him to go deeper or if he just felt like the coverage was so tight that he's basically ditching a ball over a known receiver's head. The seam route, like you said, it was a tough fit. He had to get it up over the linebacker. He saw that guy, or it might have been safety at that point, in which he's trying to put it into the perfect spot. It's missed, but I don't think that's an issue with Sanu in terms of not being in the right spot, because he had the seam pattern running up the seam, and I think there's a reason why Tom was going there thinking that he was in the right spot. We go back and forth on the drop on the third down conversion, or was it third down or fourth down?
I think
down?
That was a fourth. It was the second was time a on a fourth, conversion, I believe.
Which the ball came out hot, and it's high, and you know what? Those plays are always, you know, you'd love to see him make that play, because he came back the next series and made the exact same play, so he's capable of doing it. So, I mean, there's just certain things. And then, again, I just don't think that there's been enough consistency in terms of seeing him play and be out on the field and, mm-hmm. and being the focal point other than Baltimore, in which we can really look at his body of work with the Patriots so far and say, well, we know what we're getting out of this guy and understand what we're getting out of him, because he obviously had a ton of production in Atlanta. He's a guy that can play, and he's a smart veteran guy. And I know that he was hindered by the ankle injury, and I know that, you know, that's hard to overcome right there in that middle part of the season, especially when you're coming into a new offensive scheme, trying to learn it and get reps and time on task with a new quarterback, a new offensive system, and all the little things mm-hmm. and the nuances that they ask you to do.
With best case scenario, Julian gets better. The Patriots earn a bye. Sanu gets better. Harry continues to, I think it's a huge confidence thing with him. I mean, we talked about how he jumped the first slant that he caught from Brady. He jumped up in the air and caught it in his belly when it was really a simple catch, and some of the other catches that he hasn't made. He looked confident as shit the other day. So those three guys together, if you can get the bye, it's critical. But this is a scary week. If you don't win against Buffalo, you're now into tiebreaker mode, because you're 1-1 against them and you have the same record. So it's a scary week to get that bye, because also Kansas City has Chicago this weekend. They beat Chicago. The Patriots lose to Buffalo. Now the Patriots are in a three-way tie for the second-best record in the AFC.
It's a big week, to say the least, my friend. It's a big week.
Do you have great wariness of this Buffalo Bills team after having watched it against Pittsburgh the other night? I'm sure you had your eyes on it at some point during your commute back from pregame life and postgame.
I did. You know, and the thing about Buffalo is their staunchy defense. You know what? They're the old school. They're going to get after you. And honestly, they're going to create some issues from a standpoint of that defensive line can get after you. I mean, they've got 42 sacks on the year. You know, Phillips is a monster. He's got 9.5 sacks. And then you got Hughes, Lawson, all those guys. And then Tremaine Edmonds, Milan, Alexander, those guys create issues at the linebacker position. They're all very athletic. They all can run, and they all can play a multitude of different positions. And their scheme is set up. It's a more of a blitz zone scheme, and they don't play as much man, but they also do a great job with the skies with their, you know, veteran safeties with Hyde and Poyer. And they're just a really, really solid defense, you know, and they don't have any really any weak links, so to speak, in terms of just you attacking, well, you know, some teams you see, they have great rush defense mm-hmm. and really bad on the back end. They're just they're consistent across the board. They're solid across the board in all phases of that unit. And so that's the strength of their team. There's no doubt about it. And then offensively, they can run the ball without a doubt. You know, Singletary's obviously their leading rusher. They average 5.4, and they're going to lean on the run. And then the big wild card is Josh Allen. You know, if he's a guy that steps up and plays well, then they can put some points on the board, but they're going to lean heavy on the run game, play good defense, and keep the game tight in that manner, and hopefully be in it in the fourth quarter. And that's kind of how they've won a ton of their games. And they've gotten more creative with their offensive scheme. I mean, they've got gap schemes, they've got speed sweeps, they've got the young tight end Knox. He's been playing really well. They've got Brown on the outside, so Cole Beasley's been a big mm-hmm. addition for them. I mean, this is a solid team all around, and we keep talking about it, and everybody says, well, this is going to somehow eventually going to be the same old Buffalo. This isn't the same old Buffalo
that
people have seen of old. This is a well-coached team. Sean McDermott does an outstanding job, and they come to play each and every week, and they've been in basically all the ball games. And so Josh Allen in the first game without those three interceptions, I mean, it might be a different outcome. I mean, it was 16-10 was the final outcome, and that's after three interceptions. And it's kind of the the way that this team's set up is very similar right now to New England. They don't put a ton of points up on the board. I think they average about 20 points a game, but they play really good defense. They've got good special teams. And the only difference is, you know, Buffalo leans heavy on the run versus New England still, you know, I think that they don't lean as much on the run because they haven't been able to have as much production early on the season, but they lean more heavily in the pass. So it'll be a test for the guys up front. It'll be a test for the guys on the outside. And it'll be really interesting to see how this thing plays out.
You mentioned how they can switch defensively. That's not going to confuse Tom Brady, but can the switching from, you know, blitz zone to different types of coverages, can that wreak a little bit of havoc with the N'Keal Harrys, Jacoby Myers, Mohamed Sanu's even, who are still, you know, assimilating themselves in terms of what they're seeing?
I mean, we played them last year when I was with Detroit, and they give you fits because they create matchup problems for you, especially their third down package. They'll when I say double mug, they'll bring those two linebackers up in the A-gap right over the center, mm-hmm. but then they'll overload pressure you on the outside with the Sam linebacker and the nickel or the safety and jab out, and you at the, especially in the slot positions, you've got to be ready for hots because there's no possible way to pick some of this stuff up without being knowledgeable about how you got to break off your route, be ready to break off your route, be hot, and do those things. And they bring a lot of safety different safety pressures as well. So they challenge you with a multitude of looks and also challenge your protection schemes. And they study that stuff well. They're well coached. Like I said, they know, like, when you're in man protection and your O-line's going to the mic, well, the running back's responsible for the will linebacker. But if they bring too strong, somebody's got to break hot. And especially when you get to those third and long distances, which, you know, New England lived in the first half,
yep.
That's when a lot of that heat comes because they know that ball's got to come out quick, and then they rally and tackle. So you got to stay ahead on downs against a team like this. And then you've got to also say, well, are we going to release the tight end, or are we going to keep him in and protect him, mm-hmm. give ourselves an extra blocker, maybe give ourselves a little extra time to get the ball downfield and maybe make a chunk play. So, and like I said, the one thing also that's really good about this defense is their safeties and their disguise patterns, and they'll be down, you know, 5-6 yards from the line of scrimmage, but then they're jabbing out and they've got this deep half, you know what I mean, or they just mess with you in disguise and alignments. And so I don't think it's going to be a confusing thing for Tom so much as it does challenge you, and you've got to
do these guys know what they're looking at. Yeah,
you're right, you got to be mentally on top of it, you got to have your mic points right, and you've also got to be able to communicate that to the guys, like, hey, you're hot off these two guys, you're hot off this guy, and have a great understanding. And those guys got to be on top of it all week long.
Chunk plays and first down productivity for the Patriots offense have been just mesmerizingly poor. It's just,
yeah.
They go first down, second down, third down, and always third down is third and goddamn 4-7. It's unbelievable, isn't it? It's you know, you see them have productivity on their first drive, and then they come back on the second drive, and it's 2 yards for Sony, now 2nd and 8, and then it's incomplete, and it's 3rd and 8, which is exactly. And then you just don't get in a rhythm.
Right, and that was what I was saying in the first half. They had 1 3rd and 4. That's it. Everything else was 3rd and 8 and plus.
Ugh.
So, and that is a tough position because you really take away any opportunity for you to be balanced or even mix in a run for, you know, bang your head against the wall and rush for 3 yards and keep them off balance. Or, you know, quick plays, you've got to hold the ball in that circumstance to let your guys work down the field. And also the defensive line and everybody else in the building knows that you got to throw the ball. And even the first series, I mean, it's 3rd and 10 when they threw the screen pass, which how it speaks to
100%.
Where Cincinnati is as a football team. You know, it's 3rd and 10, and they rush up the field and let White catch the ball and run right into the end zone on a screen pass. But that's 3rd and 10 down in the red zone. So, and that was one of the conversions. So it's never easy down and distance, let alone when you're doing it consistently throughout the game.
And the chunk plays. I mean, that was a chunk play, but that was a chunk play that came on catch and run. We've seen a number of chunk plays on catch and run. There was a Gordon reception against the Steelers earlier this year. There were a couple of deep ones to Dorsett that made everybody go, see, here comes Philip Dorsett. And
right. He's
fallen off the cliff. But really, 20-plus yard passing plays where the ball has traveled in the air that much, or even catch and runs, we ain't seeing them.
No, and normally that's been one of the staples in that New England offense has always been catch and run, creating picks, whatever they might do. But it's been guys that's able to catch within that 5 to 10 yard range and run with the ball, and it creates a chunk play. But even, you know, just simply being able to drop back and throw a go route. Now, there's been some pass interferences would turn out to be, you know, a good play, but you don't see them just being able to drop back, throw a go route, kind of like they did to N'Keal Harry, where he's able to go get that ball down the field that got called back. That's one of the only ones I can remember that they've completed down the field on just a straight go route.
With a guy having a step on him. I mean, we've seen Myers and we've seen Edelman going down in between the hashes, in between the numbers, but there's either two guys with him or there's one guy with him and the other guy's further down the field than the receiver. It's no one's getting beaten until really maybe Harry.
Right, and that's what I'm saying. Like those type of plays are designed plays where you're selling the over route and then stemming in, and you know, because of Julian's presence and his ability to just his quickness and everything, and then come out on a deep sail route. They've hit a few of those. There's no doubt about that. But in terms of just being able to throw a deep comeback or a go route or a post route, you haven't seen any of that this year.
Do you have a good feeling about this Patriots team right now?
I mean, I'm not going to sit here and say I have a horrible feeling about them or I'm feeling bad about them. This team's 11-3, and I don't care who their competition is in the NFL. There's no weeks off or anything like that. They're winning ball games. They're finding different ways to do it, and they've got a winner at the quarterback's position. The coach is the best in the business. I mean, and even last year, everybody keeps talking about last year and where they were this time of year, and it was kind of the same feeling and the same just overall tone in terms of we don't know who they are, and their run game was different, yes, but at the same time, I think people were still questioning how could this team possibly go out and perform in the playoffs and be who they ended up being last year, and they've always somehow found a way to figure it out, and I think that they'll still continue to do that, and I think that they'll be able to excel and succeed when it comes time. They're gamers.
They are gamers. You never don't you dare underestimate them. All right, you're going to be up here a day early this week, aren't you?
Yeah, I can't wait to see you guys. You know, it's Saturday.
I know. I'll be on the field, but I will happily stop up and set you straight if you need any assistance on what you're looking at, okay?
Okay, God bless you. Thank you very much, and I'll see you in a few days.
All right, my friend. Talk to you soon.
All right, my
Thanks,
friend.
Matt.
See you, bye.
All right, there you go. Matt Cassel on the greatest throws of all time, the skinny on the Buffalo Bills, and some insight into what the Patriots can expect to see offensively. This is going to be a tough game. It absolutely is going to be a difficult game. It's going to be played in the teens. I can't see New England again getting up over 20 points when you look at what happened with Cincinnati. They had a short field goal. They had a pick six. There's your 10 points right there. They made no yardage. And on their other drives, two other touchdown drives, they started in Cincinnati territory. They had one legitimate, hey, starting on our own end off a kickoff drive. One. So the 34 points scored, it's needs to be put in a little bit of context. The struggle is very real. It rides on Sanu, Edelman, and N'Keal Harry to get right. And God, just give that guy a little bit of time, Tom Brady, and he'll look like the guy that he is. Okay? He ain't falling off no cliff. Don't 42 me, no 42. I want you guys to have a great middle of the week. We will talk to you on Thursday when Phil and I get after you with the game preview. Saturday.